Getting people with mental illness or addiction into stable housing saves taxpayers about $15,000 per person per year in direct costs. It's also purportedly good for our humanity. The Mental Health Association of Portland coordinated the Oregon Conference on Supportive Housing today in Portland. Federal Representatives Bonamici and Blumenauer gave the welcoming remarks. During a break, I asked Blumenauer about the decline of federal support for housing over his tenure.
The resources that have been devoted to housing have been declining. And this is going back to the Reagan administration. It's been kind of a goal in Congress to be able to cut. They don't think housing is a priority. And it's been extraordinarily frustrating because the needs continue to accelerate and the resources decline.
Is the solution then more corporate?
I think the solution is to place an appropriate priority on housing.
Also, I have you saying we're paying enough, just not to the right people.
Well, I think the total cost that are of failure of people that fall off the wagon, people who have health problems, people who have behavioral problems, people get in trouble with the law, people who get their mental health behind bars. I truly believe that if we looked at all the costs that are associated with failure, and if we were able to put it in on the front end to avoid having people fall over the edge or be able to provide more assistance for the reference I made to wraparound health, the savings just in terms of health care for people who are discharged to supportive housing would almost pay for the housing. So, I mean, they need to take a hard look at that equation.
Yeah, since the government or the citizens are ultimately responsible, do you think then the citizens want to take a more active role in housing?
No, I think they are taking a more active role in housing, but I think this is a conversation we need to have more broadly because a lot of people don't think it's their problem or don't see the connections. And I think candid discussion here where people talk about the cost of failure might help us reset.
That was U.S. Democratic Representative Earl Blumenauer, who is currently running for re-election. We'll hear from his opponent, Mark Kohler, in a few minutes. Following the opening at today's Conference on Supportive Housing, a report from the Oregon State Legislature was presented panel style. After their presentation, KBOO asked the first question.
Hi, I'm Joel Meyer with KBOO News. Blumenauer just mentioned that the federal government's been in retreat on housing for as long as he's been there. You know, if the people of a municipality are concerned about housing, why don't they take direct responsibility for it and build and own the housing?
State Rep. Ron Noble answered first.
And I'm a proponent of public-private partnerships. I think the congressman made a good point. If we rely on one funding stream, our current political environment, to jump right into there, we end up with the short end of the stick sometimes. And I think it's going to take private money and nonprofits. It's going to take some municipal money. I believe that government is closest to you at the local level. If the city of Portland goes out of business, you can't flush your toilets. That's a big problem. But county money, state money, and federal money. I think it's got to be a team effort.
Representative Kenny Geyer added this.
I'll just add on to that so you can see that there was a very bipartisan approach to this. I think you're referring to 102, probably, the change in the Constitution that would allow more flexible funding for affordable housing. Because right now what the Constitution says is for any municipal funding public projects. This was done in the Constitution in 1859, and it was mainly meant for highways and fire stations and things like that, that obviously the government would own. Government was not in the business of providing affordable housing 150 years ago, and we're now in a very different place.
During a break at the Conference on Supportive Housing, I spoke with a local housing CEO.
I'm asking everyone the same question. Why do we need public-private partnerships? If the citizens of the country or city have responsibility towards their fellow citizens, why are corporations involved at all?
Why do we need public-private partnerships?
To solve affordable housing or supportive housing problems.
Well, so I'm with Northwest Housing Alternatives. We're a nonprofit housing developer, housing owner of affordable housing. From our perspective, we get so much more done by leveraging other resources that the public sector can't leverage. So we're able to bring in foundation money, tax credit money, all sorts of other resources that if just left alone by the public sector, they wouldn't be able to pull it off.
Someone would say, well, the reason that the government doesn't have enough money is corporations aren't paying their fair share in taxes. So why is the solution to turn to corporations for our housing problems?
Well, again, we're nonprofit, private sector corporations, and that's the key. We're different than the private developers.
Is there a way to look at a not-for-profit and say, this one is doing good, this one's sort of in it for themselves?
You bet. It's all online. If a nonprofit doesn't have their financials put up on their website, you might question them.
Okay. What about a CEO who may give to candidates? Is that crossing the line?
I don't believe, I think that as nonprofits, it's okay to support initiatives and individuals who align with our mission.
Mark Kohler is challenging Earl Blumenauer for a U.S. representative of Oregon's 3rd District. I asked him about the value of a public-private partnerships.
Comes down to community involvement. I know that there are a lot of people, like you said, who do not trust those big nonprofits, that are really, huge salaries, lots of staff, but how much do they really deliver into the community? Where are these smaller community-based organization nonprofits that are springing up on all kinds of issues, not just on housing issues, but that's really where you have the activism. That's where you really have the ability to get done what really needs to be done, not just what looks politically expedient to some of the people in power. And you can tell I'm not a really big fan of a lot of the city, state, county, and even federal organizations in terms of how much of the revenue that they spend actually gets down to the point where it benefits the people it's supposed to benefit them. I've also stated publicly that I'm not going to take corporate or PAC contributions, and so it's money, of course, is a huge issue if you want to talk about it, but I knew what I would be able to do on my own, and that's what I was prepared to do when I started. I did receive probably about $1,500 total in small contributions, $5, $10, $15 from people I've met along the way who wanted to help. What I try to say to people when they first of all they say to me is, why would you run against a Democrat? Because we need Democrats, because we have to take back the House. And there's a whole issue of, this whole is just blue enough, I think they really need to have a choice to look and, to vote for someone. We don't have a Republican that's going to run here of any consequence. So there's no danger of splitting the vote. That seems to be one of the big things people worry about is if you vote for an alternative candidate, you're going to somehow open the door for a Trump-type Republican. Well, we don't have that opportunity here. That isn't going to happen. What they do have is the opportunity to make their vote count for someone who really represents them, Earl has done his whole life as a public servant, and I commend him for doing what he's done over the course of his life, but he's not in touch with the people. He is a corporate Democrat in the Pelosi mold. He voted for Hillary. He did not support Bernie. This county, this district overwhelmingly supported Bernie, and yet, Earl didn't do that, and he doesn't do that. He supports the people who support him, and those are corporations and big money, and he has no accountability because he doesn't have any competition. So, like you said, he doesn't run. He won't run. He won't debate. Everyone considers, it's a waste of time when he is automatically going to win. Well, I don't think so. There's a lot of people who are dissatisfied with, what has he done in 22 years in Congress? What can you look at in our district and say that he was responsible for? Yeah, he renamed the post office. That's great. And he has been very strong on marijuana reform, and that's good, too. But as far as for the people of this district, what can he point to and say, what has he really done? What does he fight for? I think it's just a chance for people to say, I want a choice. I want an opportunity to vote for someone who really cares about this neighborhood. I live on Social Security. I don't have $10 million in the bank like he does. I'm one of them, and I think that's the opportunity people have here. And that's the one thing I would say to people is think about your choice between more of the same or someone who's really going to be committed to making the changes happen for the people here that really want those kinds of changes.
That was Mark Kohler, the challenger to incumbent Earl Blumenauer's 3rd District House seat. Mr. Kohler spent $10,000 of his own money and raised another $1,500 in small donations. According to the website Open Secrets, Mr. Blumenauer has raised just over $1 million to keep his seat. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.